This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. What is considered one of the most competitive races for state senate in Michigan this year is happening in Kalamazoo County. State Representative Margaret O'Brien currently represents the city of Portage and surrounding townships in the 61st State House District. She is the Republican nominee in the 20th State Senate District. Margaret O'Brien, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tell our listeners once again briefly what you would like to do if you were to get 4 years in the state senate.
When I first ran for the state house in 2010, I was really concerned about the direction of our state. We had difficulties balancing budgets. There was rising debt in our state and a lack of optimism. And over the last 3.5 years, I focus on making sure that we pass balanced budgets that have no gimmicks and that take in consideration the future. That second, we have reduced our long-term debt, which we have successfully done by nearly $20 billion. And then third, that we put into place policies that show people we do have a hope for our future. And I want to take these same principles to the Senate, because if we're honest, the job is far from done. While Michigan has drastically reduced its unemployment rate, we know we still have more to do. And despite the fact that there's been job creation of nearly 300,000 jobs, we lost over 800,000 jobs during the last decade. Again, we have more to do. And so I want to take these same principles to the Senate to make sure that we don't miss a beat and that we keep focusing on the future of our state. Because right now, as it stands, if we continue on the same path, Michigan will pay off its debt in 2038. So there's still a lot to do, and I don't want my kids and grandkids to be saddled with the poor decisions of people during the last decade. So I want to make sure that we continue to practice fiscal responsibility.
Specifically on jobs, what else does Michigan need to do? As you noted, there has been job growth, but the state is still catching up. So what else remains on the table there as you see it?
We need to stop looking at Michigan's budget as how is money spent, but rather how is money invested? What is the return we're getting? So on roads, we all know we need better roads in this town and throughout the state. And in fact, some areas are hit so hard that they're low traveled roads. They don't even have the money to return them to gravel. And so we need to continue to have a focus on roads. Now, over the last 3.5 years, we have put in over $870 million from the general fund into roads. That's a stark difference between the administration before I was in office, of which no dollars were put into the general fund. So we have to continue our focus on roads. Now, the House passed a bipartisan plan to have a first step made towards a long-term solution, but it's sitting in the Senate. So we're still working on what can get both votes in the House and in the Senate. Now, in the Senate, I think on the roads package, there's been some partisan issues that have arisen, and that I can bring my bipartisan leadership to the issue and how we talk about issues and take the politics out of it. But second, after roads, we need to talk about education. We know that birth rates have declined in Michigan, and during the last decade, we lost over 150,000 kids out of our state who left because their parents didn't have jobs anymore. And so we need to look at how we invest in education. Schools have two types of costs, fixed and variable. And the fixed costs don't change when kids leave the school system or when kids enter. And so we need to change our thinking about how we invest in education. And then finally, auto insurance continues to be a big issue. And I get numerous questions at the door and emails asking me, what are we going to do about auto insurance? And having served on the insurance committee the last 4 years, I definitely have ideas on what we can do to lower auto insurance for Michigan families.
Okay, we'll try to get to all that before we're done. Let's start with schools, because this has been a big bone of contention in terms of how much money is actually being invested in schools and where it's ending up. Of course, you know, there's the chart that you've pointed to many times that shows an increase in education dollars. But if we had a superintendent here right now, such as Michael Rice, he would say a lot of that's not getting into the classroom. So when you talk about investment, how do you balance those things in terms of, for instance, money in the classroom and then, of course, the money to cover teacher pensions?
Historically, education has been the single most political topic in our state. And the first thing we have to do is take the politics out. And so when you take the politics out, it means what is the goal that we all want? And how do we work towards it in partnership? Right now, education is about being a political football. And being the mom of two kids, my kids are not political football. So I have not been happy with how education has been discussed in the past. Now, the last 3.5 years, I have worked in partnership with both Republicans and Democrats to address the education issue. First thing we had to realize is that with Proposal A that was passed, it moved all the retirement obligations to the school districts. The state no longer had the obligation to pay retirement. And so a portion of their per pupil allotment that they get from the state, they give back to the retirement system. So the first thing that the state has done, we've invested, I think the most recent number was nearly $900 million extra into the teacher retirement system. And people say, well, Margaret, that money doesn't go in the classroom. That $900 million the state put into the retirement account on behalf of the schools, so they didn't have to pay the $900 million. So the schools saw a benefit there by not having to pay that portion of the obligation. They still had to pay costs towards retirement, but the state covered them that $900 million. And second, it's buying down the long-term liabilities that is in that system. So we definitely have a plan to reduce what portion of their per pupil they're spending on retirement benefits. The second thing we have to look at is, again, we have fixed and variable costs. And we know that as a student leaves a district, the school does not see their costs go down by that amount. So we have to start talking about how schools are funded. What's the smart investment? I think the state should be relooking at this issue, and I am willing to lead on this issue about how should we fund schools.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with State Representative Margaret O'Brien. She is the Republican nominee for State Senate in the 20th District, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Let's tackle roads. Obviously, this has been an issue which has been ongoing for a few years, actually. Just to get your one vote, should it be later this year in the State House or perhaps next year if you're elected to the State Senate, what's the combination of things you want to see for a long-term sustainable funding model for road maintenance and repair?
You mentioned it in your question, sustainable. Simply increasing the gas tax is not a long-term solution. Now, the legislature, we did index the gas tax to the construction CPI so that we could allow for increasing construction costs, which we know happens. But having a system that solely relies on the gas tax is not a long-term solution. I would like for us to really discuss and possibly even put before the voters something totally different that would be more sustainable. I've talked about maybe we should eliminate the gas tax completely, eliminate it constitutionally, and ask the voters, would you like to see a 7% sales tax instead and have that 1%, that 1 cent go towards roads? That would be something that would allow all users to participate. Right now, what we have is the roads are primarily funded by gasoline-powered vehicles. So here on Western's campus, we've got electric plug-in stations. If those vehicles don't need that much gas, they're not paying for the roads, despite the fact their car weighs just as much as a gasoline-powered car. And so we've got certain users who are using the roads that aren't paying. So maybe if we can find a different way that can include all users of the roads, and all of us use the roads, whether we walk, we ride a bike, we drive a car, everybody relies on the roads. Everybody gets food from somewhere. Everybody buys something from somewhere. Roads are key, so we got to make sure all users are paying in.
I want to get to taxes here for a moment. Obviously, the tax on pension income has become a big issue in this political season. You have said that it did change the system and make it more fair. In other words, that people who were working were being taxed on their money as opposed to someone who might have retired early wasn't if they had a pension. But I guess I'm wondering about what about the other issue of fairness, which is changing the system on people who had planned on retiring and that pension income not being taxed.
For people, when the change was made, if they were 67 or older, they saw no change at all. And the question comes down to, should your job dictate your tax rate? Because that's the old way. The old way is, if you have a government pension, you'll never pay tax. And interestingly enough, you have a government pension, you typically can retire earlier than somebody in the private sector or somebody without a pension. So a government pension, no tax. If you had a private pension, you had a certain exemption, then you paid tax. If you had a 401k, We know that you can't do an early withdrawal of 401k or there's a penalty. But if you got to that age, the state law did not provide for an exemption, although there are some who may have taken an exemption figuring it was similar to a private pension. But they had no exemption, so they had to pay full tax. Anybody who did not have a 401k or a pension available to them, maybe they invested in stocks. They had to pay the full tax. And if you were 70 years old and you were still working, you had to pay full tax. So I don't think the system was fair in that your job dictated what your tax rate is. So we tried to allow for those who were substantially into their retirement, made sure there was no change for them, but we instituted an exemption for everybody. So previously, there were groups of people who had no exemption that now have one. So 20,000 individual, 40,000 married, and you now have an exemption. That first 20,000 or 40,000 of income is tax-free. And I appreciate you asking because I've had a number of people ask me about it and they go, Margaret, I'm paying tax now. And then when we talked through it, they realized they didn't have a pension and it was just all the rhetoric that's being spread. They thought they were paying something that they weren't. And some of the people realize they now don't have to pay a tax that they were paying previously.
A lot of reporting has been done on what's happened with Aramark and the prison food system. Looking forward, when there is a proposal, as I'm sure there will be in the future, and if you're in the legislature, to privatize some sort of state service, would you have a different set of criteria or would there be different things that you would look for to ensure that this is being done properly?
Yes. When I look at the Aramark proposal, privatization, by and large, is not bad. But is privatization always the best option? Not in every case. So what I would look for, if it came before the legislature, is ensuring that we put in criteria of what makes a qualified bidder. When I was on the Portage City Council, where the city council actually got to pick who was our servicer, the person who was going to do whatever project, whereas in state government, things are so big, the legislature often is not included at all. We might vote on an overarching policy, but somebody else is picking the bidder who wins. I would say let's have lowest qualified bidder and let's spell out what qualified means, because this is an issue when you have somebody that hasn't been doing the job. They apparently missed their mark. Apparently the state will still receive the savings despite Aramark's going to have to pay people more, but it's going to come out of their pocket, not our pocket. But it has been unnecessary of an issue for the state. We shouldn't have had this issue. But we also need to look at, when you look at the maggots in the food, that came from the food source provider, not from Aramark. We need to look at everything through the whole complete chain to make sure that we've got qualified people delivering the product, regardless if it's the private sector or it's a government worker. We need to hold everybody accountable to certain minimum standards.
You have said that you are open to amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity. Can you give a framework of the conditions under which that would get your yes vote?
What I'm looking for is making sure that we're respecting all people. And obviously, anybody who is an employee, they should really have their work judged by their individual merit, the talents, the skills they bring to the workplace. So what I'm looking for is just a level playing field for all employees. I want to make sure that we have an environment where everyone's respected, but we often will throw out those people who have deeply held religious beliefs. And so we need to make sure that we're respecting everybody. Now, as far as when a bill is going to come in front of us, I'm not sure when a bill will come in front of us. I anticipate one would. I need to see it as it's gone through the process. I've been very focused on education issues, and there's been another team that's been working on this issue. I want to see what they've come up with. I'm optimistic we can find something that can gain everybody's support, but a lot of it's going to be waiting to see what the bill is going to look like.
Margaret O'Brien, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien is currently a state representative. She represents Portage and surrounding townships in the 61st State House District. She's the Republican nominee for state Senate in the 20th District, which includes Kalamazoo County. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.